Hi, welcome to Lights, Camera, Author. I'm Jim Juno, and this is, of course, the show where we talk with authors who write books about Hollywood and music and entertainment in general. And I have with me today, we are going, as they say in America, across the pond today with my guest. His name is Luke Haynes, and he has a new book coming out on in March. It's called Freaks Out, Weirdos, Misfits, and Deviants: The Rise and Fall of Righteous Rock and Roll. Welcome to Lights,
Yeah.
Camera, Author, Luke.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Now, I'm going to touch base with the little preview.
Yeah.
This is almost going to be for American listeners. This is going to be kind of an educational show because, the book has a lot of English slang to it, which is nothing wrong with it. So if I hear something, I may ask you to explain it, but that's cool
Sure.
because I'm kind of a square myself, So anyway, but
We'll
you
soon change that.
but in the preview in the preview for the book, you have a whole list of people that says, "The followers, this book is not for you. The salt of the earth, this book is not for you." Who is this book for?
It's for the freaks, baby.
And
Of
what is,
course.
of course, and what is a freak?
Well, I mean, if I told you that, then you wouldn't buy the book. So, you got to buy the. I mean, I think people. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the term "freak" was used so much in the kind of American rock and roll idiom. It was certainly used here, maybe to sort of describe kind of late '60s kind of West London kind of groovers who had sort of dropped out. I mean, it's not solely about those kind of people and those kind of underground bands. It's more of a kind of way of life and an attitude, I'm a self-proclaimed freak, always have been.
You were
So it's
born a
about my,
freak. You were born a freak, you
yeah,
say in your book.
I am a freak. Still a freak.
And but you were, you say you were born a freak and you're gonna stay a freak and you're a proud freak, as we'll say.
I mean, I'm very proud that I've never done a proper day's work in my life. And I intend to, which is, that's a kind of fairly unpopular thing to say in Britain because people get kind of, especially, I mean, I don't know what it's like in the US, but we're kind of, very much conditioned to kind of, that labor is the dignity of labor is a kind of a thing here. That you must, it's worthy to kind of work in a real job,
A
and
real job,
it's like a life, it's like a life sort of well spent. And I was always very against that, and I got lucky anyway that I made a, got to make the records that I wanted, and got, I get to do the things I do. So I'm kind of lucky as well. But I also wear my freak badge that I've never had a proper job. So.
yeah. And this book, excuse me, I've got a little bit of a slight cold
Sure.
here, but this book is really a It gives people a tour of rock and roll music from the beginnings in England. I mean, even all the way back to Johnny Ray when he was the original freak, as you
In
say.
my mind, I mean, it's not a rock history as such, because there are a lot of rock histories have already been written, and in a way, I don't, it doesn't, the rock history doesn't need to be written again. Maybe it needs to be rewritten, which is sort of what I'm doing in a way. It's more of a kind of, it's sort of looking at kind of groups that say I was really into, who I consider to be freak bands, or if they're not considered to be, I make an argument that they could be. And it's kind of sort of via the kind of lens of memoir, that kind of thing as well.
I got a feeling it wasn't so much a history, but as a tour, and you were the tour
Tour is a
guide.
good word. Very much so. Tour is a good, is a nice way of putting it.
And I mean, you talk about how times change, with the people who change. You actually say that the quiffs take over from Johnny Ray, and the now for those of you in America who aren't familiar with the term quiff. It's basically a hairstyle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
almost like a, would you call it a pompadour?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think one of the chapters is called you know, when Elvis's quiff knocked out Johnny Ray, and that's kind of about, you know, the beginning of rock and you know, rock and roll, and Johnny Ray, who I consider to be perhaps the first freak, or certainly the first kind of modern post-war era freak, was definitely kind of surpassed by Elvis, who then came along with you know, who kind of took Johnny Ray's kind of quiff, his low kind of quiff, and kind of came in with the kind of like the magisterial Elvis quiff that we, you know, that we kind of know and love. That's not to say that, you know, there's nothing against Elvis at all. I mean, I love Elvis, but I wouldn't really consider Elvis in my kind of freak tour.
See, and that's the amazing thing is that people who I would associate it, and I'll profess ignorance in this, people who I associated with freaks were not really freaks in the true sense of the word. And you in your book you go into that. There was one person, you well let's do one of the chapters here. Eight reasons to hate. Or to wait, eight reasons to like Jim
Was it eight?
Morrison,
Yeah, to love Jim Morrison.
to
Yeah,
love Jim Morrison, and you give the reasons why. I mean, and how Jim Morrison was like considered to be uncool, and then or what? He was never considered cool in the freak world, was he?
I don't think so, no. And he's never, and he's certainly in the UK anyway, his reputation isn't sort of what it is in other countries. He was never kind of as cool, seen as kind of how cool he was in the States. I mean, the Doors were kind of a marginal band in the UK. They didn't have the big hits that they had in the States. And of course, in the States, they were, you know, from what I mean, obviously I wasn't around at the time, but they were kind of enormous. But since then, he's one of those bands journalists are not keen on the Doors. I've never met an English music journalist who likes the Doors. So I felt that they needed some kind of defense. And, you know, Morrison, the Doors were kind of a, you know, when I was in, you know, band starting out, when we loved the Doors because they were kind of a thing you had to discover from, you know, from like older brothers' record collections or something like that. They weren't kind of easily available, you know. So we had to discover them, and they were, in my world, the Doors were kind of the greatest thing ever for about 18 months or so, something like that. So I'm kind of diving back into my youth, kind of remembering this stuff.
Right, and who else can rock leather pants like Jim Morrison?
Well, that's what I say. Yeah. I mean, very few people. I mean, the Beatles wore them in when they were in Hamburg, and never wore them again. But I think Morrison was like one of the few who could do it. I mean, it's not a place you can really go to, you know, unless you're Jim.
I could think of a ninth reason to like him, and
What's
that
that?
is, he told Ed Sullivan to go to hell.
Yeah,
You
yeah. Yeah, that's a great, and then you know, and Ed Sullivan's face on that clip is fantastic. Yeah, the famous, well, they do light my fire. Yeah,
Right. He was told to change the lyrics from "We couldn't get much higher" to "We couldn't get much better," and they basically said, for want of a better term, "F you." You know.
Those were innocent days, innocent days.
Now the you also go into the Beatles. You of course you were hesitant to do the Beatles because so much has been written about the Beatles, and but you really find a niche there because you categorize each Beatle. Paul, what was, see, George Ringo was a listener, and of course, John was John the Baptist,
It's based on the kind of legend of the Cathars, who were kind of an early emetic and heretic sect in around sort of like southern Europe. They had like listeners and believers and this kind of thing, and they were kind of they basically broke away from the orthodoxy of the Catholic Church, hence the kind of heresy. So, and the Beatles very much did that. I see them very much as heretics, and by also the thing about them is, in my book, it's not so much a kind of history of the Beatles, but it's about, and much as I love the Beatles, but this is about how they were so good at pop music, they kind of ruined it, in a way. It was very, it was, they were just, and they kind of, they made being a freak acceptable, for a few years, especially when they were kind of, doing Revolution 9 and all that kind of stuff, when they were getting really weird. And that's not the way a, freaks should never be acceptable. So they kind of made being a freak acceptable. So that's the angle I come from on that.
Right. And I love how you say in your book, you say that they were having a dinner with their dentist. And who in the world has dinner with their dentist, you know?
That's the thing, isn't it? This, I think this is 1965, and when they were kind of, they really were on top of the world, and going out for dinner with their dentist of all people, and who he was the man who allegedly or reputedly first gave them LSD. Well-known story. So yeah.
Now you also mentioned different when you get into the 80s, then you're talking about my era because I really got into the London the British scene before MTV became big. I mean, we in I was in college and I was at a college radio station, and we were playing people like the well the 70s, but the Move, which eventually
Great
became.
band, yeah.
Yeah, they became the Electric Light Orchestra with Jeff
They
Lynne.
did, yeah.
But Adam and the Ants, you of course,
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
A king of freaks, yeah.
Yes.
And the weird thing about, Adam was that, again, this was kind of when, this is when the world of, being a freak was kind of open to you almost as a job or a career. And Adam was kind of the strangest pop star I think this country's ever produced. And we've produced quite a few kind of weird pop stars. The Brits are particularly good at weird pop stars. And when Adam was kind of having hits, I mean, he was selling records to like 13-year-old girls, with like Burundi drummers and like Screaming Feedback, Link Ray guitars, and all this, these weird kind of tribal kind of kind of culty kind of lyrics about, his kind of ant cult and all this stuff. It was really weird, and he was like, he was like the biggest pop star in the country for about 2 years, and you got to remember this. I mean, if, when you look at the clips of him on a, we had a program called Top of the Pops, which
Pops
I'm
the
sure
Pops,
you,
yes.
and I'm sure some of your, listeners of this will be aware. The Top of the Pops was a program that used to go out every Thursday, and the whole country used to watch it and have all the kind of hit records on it. And Adam was kind of, when he first appeared on it was kind of like, what the hell is that? It was one of those moments. It's like, I mentioned it also in the book that there was another moment like that when Sparks first went on Top of the Pops, and there's a kind of there's a kind of mythology about Sparks that that when Rob Mayall first appeared on Top of the Pops, he's looking kind of sideways into the camera with his little moustache. You got it. That all the dads in the country went, bloody hell, it's Adolf Hitler on Top of the Pops. And I can vow to this that my dad actually said those words when I was about 7 years old. I can remember him calling my mum into the living room, Joy. And my mum's like, Joy, Joy, it's bloody Adolf Hitler on Top of the Pops. It really happens.
And the really odd thing about that is that Rob Mann, I believe his name was, is that what you
Ron Mayall,
Rob
Rob.
Mayall, Rob Mayall.
Russell Mayall,
Yeah, he was also responsible for indirectly for the Go-Go's, because I believe he was having an affair, I believe, with Jane Wedlin.
I think that was Russell Mayall, the singer.
Russell Mayall,
I think
singer.
those
Okay.
were two brothers. But indeed,
It's amazing that, all things are connected in rock and roll.
Of course they are.
Amazing.
Yeah.
you talk a bit, you talk a lot about Mark Bolan.
Yeah.
Now, when I was in college, I mean, I listened to people like Sector 42, and you
Sure.
mentioned Gen X.
Yeah.
Billy Idol and Gen X
Yeah.
is what I remember. So they were early. Would they be
Yeah.
considered freaks?
Not really, no, because especially when we, Billy Idol's probably kind of getting into kind of freak territory now. I mean that in a good way. He's kind of, I quite like Billy Idol, but I don't think when he was kind of having his MTV success, not really. But I mean, Mark Bolan was kind of, and we were talking about the connections, but of course, Generation X, I think, made their TV debut on the Mark Bolan TV show in this country, which was actually a kids' show. It was on in the kind of what we used to call the kind of between 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. There was kids' TV on the national channel for all the kids when they got back from school. And Mark Bolan actually had a half-hour show on kids' TV where he would kind of debut, or he kind of looked, he kind of tried to kind of relaunch himself as the sort of the godfather of punk, because he was always looking for kind of an opportunity. And Generation X were on that, but I always considered Mark to be a freak, more so than there was always a thing between like Bowie or Bolan in this country. And I'm more of a kind of, I veer more towards Mark Bolan, even though I love David Bowie's records. I kind of almost do. I almost believe that, as David Bowie always had that thing about, his whole shtick was kind of the kind of alien thing. But I always kind of believed that Mark Bolan really did come from space, and there's still part of me that does believe that, because there's been nothing like him since. And he was just, if ever there was one guy, a freak, who was just born to be that, it was him.
See, that's an amazing thing. And was it Bolan that you mentioned were friends with the two Dorotheys, Dorothy Kilgallen and Dorothy,
No,
right?
that's
That's
Johnny Ray. Johnny
Johnny
Ray,
Ray. Johnny Ray. I'm sorry. I'm getting my freaks confused here. Okay.
It's easily done. It's okay.
Yeah.
That's why you need my book, you see, to help you negotiate it, and all this stuff. It's very important to know.
That's right. But
Yeah.
it's amazing that I think now Mark Bolan, he was in T-Rex. Let me make sure I get that right. Correct?
Absolutely.
T-Rex, and in America, T-Rex or Tyrannosaurus Rex was always known as T-Rex. The big hit over here was "Bang a Gong, Get It On." You know, and I remember the video from it because there was a very young Elton John on keyboards.
That's right.
I wouldn't think Elton John would be considered a freak.
No,
No,
not at
not
all. Not at all. No. I mean, it's no, I mean, you've got to be a certain, it's, you've got to be really kind of, Elton's almost like the anti-freak in a way. I mean, not, I mean, that's, he's done some good stuff, but he's the
Oh, yeah.
anti-freak really for me. Yeah.
He's the anti-freak.
Yeah. Or maybe Sting. Sting's probably the anti-freak, actually. Yeah.
Really? Why would that? Why would that be?
Oh, well, I think the Police, I mean, just had records that were kind of astonishingly about nothing at all. I mean, I can't think
Yeah.
of a, I can't think, I mean,
You
I
mean
know they
da
had
do,
subjects,
da
but
do, da da, da dee, da do, whatever.
the band, it's just about a group who stood for so little. So they stood for so little and had so much success. What does that tell you? I don't know. Yeah.
I think it tells a lot about how far the audience tastes have fallen,
Yeah.
since,
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
nowadays you don't even see anybody along the lines. And I'm sorry if I tick some people off out there because their favorite artist is, but I don't see anybody nowadays who I could consider to be a real freak.
No, it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult because it's, I mean, but the music business is sort of very different now, certainly over here. And I do, I mean, not to kind of be alienating to your kind of American listeners, audience, but I mean, obviously, I've written it from a very British point of view, so maybe it'll appeal to like the Anglophiles. I know there are some of those are kind of fans of English pop music and all that kind of stuff, but there's the, there was a time time when it was almost, the pop music in the UK was, it was for the kind of chancers and the losers and the weirdos. And it's where they went because they weren't good at, they weren't good at sports, what you call like the jocks and all that kind of thing. It was kind of, it's where the kind of w real weirdos went, like, I mean, the classic example of great freakdom that kind of crosses the divide of the channels would be the Ramones, of course, who were, all Joey at Ramones, or Dee Dee, were obviously fantastic freaks. And they were the people that obviously, they were kind of the weird kids at school. We all knew that, they were born to kind of be in bands, and that's kind of the way I always felt it should be. And I think it's sort of changed now that you have kind of, that kind of those people are probably less welcome in the world of rock and roll. I mean, we had a good example of someone who I think it'd be very difficult to imagine would have a such a big career would be Ian Dury these days. I don't know if I don't know if you are aware of him. You are in the States, but he was kind of, I mean, he was huge in this country, a brilliant lyricist, but was disabled from childhood polio. And even though we have, we are supposed to be, much more accepting of these things as we should be, and we have diversity and all those kind of good things, I still can't imagine that Ian Dury would make it into the kind of pop arena like he could do in the late 70s, where he was just embraced as like, my God, this guy's amazing, and he looked, he wasn't a kind of anyone that he, anyone no one would kind of pity that guy in any way. He was like, tough guy, really tough guy, and that with an amazing capacity for language and an amazing band. So yeah, I think it's just tough to be, it would be tough to be an Ian Dury or a Mark Bolan nowadays.
Do you think it, now here in America, this had a big effect, is the era of MTV when it came on in 1981. It brought a whole bunch of British authors, authors, I'm sorry, British performers, exposure to America. But do you think it changed the whole view? I mean, no longer could rock and rollers be, I would say, socially unacceptable. If you know,
No.
if you wanted to get on MTV and make it big,
Yeah, you
you
couldn't
had
be like ugly dudes weren't allowed. Yeah.
it.
No ugly dudes anymore. Yeah, it probably did. I mean, probably had a great effect. I mean, we didn't really have in this country, we didn't sort of I wouldn't say suffer, because I mean these everything kind of changes, and it's not a, it's not you don't want to be like the Luddite kind of always kind of complaining about new stuff. Things change, but I think that maybe MTV changed the perspective of music, and it's changed, obviously it changed the perspective of culture as well in a big way.
I mean, you couldn't see people like Mama Cass Elliot anymore.
That's true. But I guess she was kind of, you didn't see that. I mean, Cass was great as well, but you couldn't, and I haven't, there's some people I haven't included in my book. She would, if I was writing a kind of whole kind of an enormous tome of, history of who I considered freaks, she would obviously be in it. I think she's in the list in the end of kind of, there's a kind of nominal list of freaks, non-freaks, and freak enablers. That kind of thing at the end, but she would be in it. But again, it's kind of, it's a very sort of personal history. So, I was kind of, the mamas and papas didn't sort of figure in my life in a big way. I was never, I mean, although I kind of, I love their records, there was no kind of memoir aspect to them to kind of fit into the book. So, yeah.
There was a performers that you mentioned as rock and roll artists, and I was a little bit surprised. You class the Carpenters as rock and roll artists.
Absolutely. Well, I use the word rock and roll to refer to all pop music. I like that. I just like that terminology, and it's also kind of about an attitude, that I would consider I would consider, the Carpenters to be a rock and roll band, in their attitude. I mean, look at the people who Look at the Who, I mean, like Sonic Youth were doing, like, Carpenter's covers, and I think that I mean really, there's Freak and there's Freak, and I mean, you only have to kind of you only have to sort of get a glimpse of Richard Carpenter to know what I mean by that. I mean, he's a kind of weird guy.
Yes,
You
he. Now that you
know?
mention it, yeah, it
I
is.
I mean nothing by that. I'm just saying, I'm just putting it out there. I'm,
Yeah.
sure he's a great guy, yeah.
One of my favorite groups out of the 80s were called The Tourists.
No, so Annie Lennox,
Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart before they became the Eurythmics. And I was thinking that they were probably, would you consider them freaks?
No, not really.
Really?
I mean, Dave Stewart, yeah, maybe, but because he's a kind of Dave Stewart's a kind of strange guy. He gets, I can only imagine him being Dave Stewart. He's quite professional as well, and so like professionalism doesn't necessarily go hand in hand with freakery. So
I
you kind
like.
of, which is the way, perhaps is the reason why I wouldn't include. And again, as I said, I like his record a lot, but I wouldn't include David Bowie as a freak, because I think he's too professional, or
Yes.
was too professional, obviously.
Well, I tell you what, the author's name is Luke Haynes, and the book is Freaks Out. I love the title. Freaks Out, Weirdos, Misfits, and Deviants, the Rise and Fall of Righteous Rock and Roll. Luke, I really appreciate you being on Times on Time on a
Thanks so much. Yeah.
Lights,
Yeah.
Camera, Author, and I hope we can come have you again.
Love to. Yeah. Been good to meet you, Jim. Yeah.